This segment of the Financial Sense News Hour is brought to you by Nationwide Financial. For more information about Nationwide's products and services, please visit nationwide.com. That's nationwide.com. Neither Nationwide nor any of its affiliates is related to or affiliated with Jim Poplava of Poplava Securities, Incorporated.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour with the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Welcome back to our Lifetime Income series, which we have been pursuing with a passion over the last few weeks here on the program. And as we have come through scenarios of things you will face in retirement, we've covered issues such as planning, having a plan. If you haven't figured it out, it's an important part of your plan. That's why it's called a plan. And we examine things such as what do you want to have when you're retired in terms of income and outgo? What must you have in terms of income and outgo? And how to deal with, flakiness in the market. Because right now, if we look at the issue that Ben Bernanke said we're going to hold interest rates at zero, doesn't seem like your options, Jim, for getting income in retirement are as great as they were over the last couple of decades. So today we are entitling this segment, How to Live Comfortably and to Prosper in a Low Interest Rate Environment.
And John, you know, you mentioned a couple things. It all begins with knowing what your number is. And I can't emphasize that over and over again, because it is really the foundation of any kind of retirement plan. Until you know what your individual number is, your essential expenses, must-haves, and want-to-haves, you really can't put together a plan, and you really can't strategically decide, okay, what do I need to do with my investment portfolio? And one of the reasons we start out with what we call that number, because once you know what that number is, and let's say, for example, let's just do a simple illustration. Let's say that your number, including everything that you need to have for retirement, I'm just going to use this very simple number of $100,000 because it's just easy to illustrate. So let's say that you need $100,000 to live in retirement. Once you know what that number is, then you can start subtracting your sources of income. For example, Social Security. Let's say that between your husband and wife, you've got $30,000 in Social Security. Any kind of retirement or pension you may have from a company. So let's say you have $20,000 coming in pensions, or in the case of we discussed Bill and Jan Smith, where they had a $105,000 budget, Social Security and everything else coming in, they basically had a number that we had to replace. There was a shortfall of $50,000. So once you know what that shortfall is, in other words, after you subtract Social Security and pension from your number, then you can say, all right, given my investments that I've accumulated, the money that I have available to me, then you can develop a financial plan that says, all right, this is what I have in terms of income returns for my investments. And that really should drive what kind of portfolio or how you manage your portfolio during your retirement years. A lot of people just say, there's these cookie cutter approaches. Well, you need to have 60% in fixed income, 40% in stocks, or et cetera. Well, that isn't the way you put together a retirement plan. You begin with that budget. Then you subtract the things that you know that are assured, like Social Security and a pension. And then you find out and you arrive at that shortfall number. And that can better guide you in terms of what you really need to do with your investment portfolio.
Yeah, I think the hard part, Jim, here is picking out the, what would I call it, the options that investors have. Because as I said before, we're limited right now. So how do you lay that out? This to me is the key thing.
Well, I mean, it really begins with how big your pot of assets is. It's going to determine. But I mean, there's several things that you can do to solve this problem, John. In the case of Bill and Jan Smith, We used a combination of three things. We used an annuity that was a immediate annuity on Jan's life to replace the shortfall in her retirement as she retired, because she was only going to get 66% of her salary in retirement. So there was a drop of 36% in her income as a result of retirement. So we replaced that with an immediate annuity. So immediate annuity is one method of using, but we also used a laddered bond portfolio, especially in Bill's IRA, because of his fears over what happened to him when he retired in 2006 and the bear market that took place between 2007 and 2008, where Bill lost basically $150,000. And then finally, we used dividend-paying stocks because there was two things that were significant here is we still had to address inflation in the future. Secondly, Jan was 8 years younger than Bill. And thirdly, she was a woman, so her life expectancy was 5 to 6 years greater than, let's say, a male. So in the Bill and Jan Smith case, we used a combination, John, of three different vehicles to solve their retirement needs. We used an annuity to make up the loss in Jan's salary. We used bonds to create more taxable income because Bill had been shell-shocked and was keeping his money in money market. And then we used dividend-paying blue-chip stocks that would not only give them a monthly income, but also would address the issue of future inflation needs, because they were, you know, whatever they were spending money on today, we all know, on an annual basis, I mean, you just have to look at, your checkbook and see where you're spending your money today versus a year ago, that your cost of living is going to be going up. And especially with the government and the Federal Reserve actively pursuing a monetary program to increase the rate of inflation.
Yeah, but we now need to go to the couch here, because you see, Jim, if you are going to prepare people for retirement, you need to look at the issue of angst that Freud gave us. And people have a lot of angst when it comes to their retirement, and that's sort of driven on by the idea of their portfolio being endangered by, oh, the stock market, maybe another crash, inflation, all the talk of a fiscal cliff and taxation. You hear talk about the collapse of the dollar. And so no matter what the plan is, there's got to be a built-in buffer for that.
Well, and there was in the case of the Smiths. I mean, Jan's annuity of $2,000 a month, John, that hasn't changed since we implemented the program. It's immune to anything that's happening in the stock market. If we take a look at the $500,000 that we put in bonds in Bill's IRA, those bonds, unlike a bond fund, are paying him a monthly check. They actually don't pay monthly. They pay every 6 months. But between all the bonds in the portfolio, he's taken out an income stream on a monthly basis based on the annualized income from his bond portfolio. That hasn't changed one iota. And likewise, if we take a look at his stock portfolio, yes, some of those stocks dipped in the market downturn that we got in the month of May, and they also dipped in the month of October. But over half of the portfolio, the stocks in the portfolio have increased their dividends. So that hasn't changed whatsoever. The bonds have actually gone up in value. The annuity hasn't changed. And even though the stocks have fluctuated, they're still up for the year. They're up more than what he's actually getting in returns from his bonds. And also, John, the income is increasing. And usually what we do with the bond portfolio is when we put together a laddered bond portfolio, we know from the laddered bonds exactly what the annual income is going to be. Because if you buy a $10,000 bond, it's paying you 5%. We know we're going to get $500 in interest. And then what we can do is, after the bond portfolio is put together, we know what the annual income is, and then we can compute either a monthly or a quarterly distribution rate. Likewise, with the dividend portfolio, once that's put together, we know what the dividends are in the dividend income program, and we distribute at an annual rate. So if the dividends, let's just make it easy, let's say there was $100,000 in a dividend income program, it's paying 3%, we know that the $3,000 a year, we divide that by 12, and that becomes the monthly distribution rate.
But what about all those dividend increases you're talking about?
usually what we do is, any increases that exceed the monthly distribution rate, they accumulate in a money market fund. And we can do a number of things. We can either distribute that at the end of the year. I've had clients that have called me up and said, we're taking a trip, or I need money for this for Christmas, or this thing has come up, and so we make an additional distribution rate. Or if it's left in the account, we can invest it. And then what we do is we reset the distribution rate for the following year. So let's say that in this example that dividend income was at an annual rate of 3%. So we had $3,000. Let's say that as a result of dividend increases, those dividends go up 10%. So now the following year, we know that the income rate is going to be $3,300. Then what we would do is reset the distribution rate based on $3,300, not on $3,000. So we can reset those or distribute the excess at the end of the year if the client needs it for, taking a trip or something. But there's an easy way to do this.
Yeah, and that's the advantage of a plan, because you can tailor your plan. At least if you have some operating motif, you can actually make changes as you need to go. But it acts as a very important buffer against all of these things that are going to be coming at you during retirement. And in the case of Bill and Jan, their retirement lifestyle really has not changed at all because of the fiscal cliff, because of the elections, or, who knows, whatever.
And that's one of the things that I think can bring a lot more security, John, that can allow you to live comfortably and also sleep at night. I mean, Jan knows that every single month, and Bill knows that every single month, Jan is going to get her $2,000 check from the insurance company. Bill and Jan also know that the bonds that they have in their portfolio, they're producing income. In fact, the bond portfolio is actually appreciated since it was put into place. And that income isn't going to change. So, yes, there's been some fluctuations in the portfolio with the stock market, but, that hasn't changed their check that's coming in from dividends. And I think this is a point that I think is often lost on investors. I mean, if we take, I always like to refer to a worst case scenario. If you take, a blue chip stock like ExxonMobil, and you take a look at what happened to that stock in, let's say, the downturn in 2007 and 2008, when the price fell considerably, John, the dividends from those companies like Exxon or a Johnson & Johnson or a Chevron, a Procter & Gamble, McDonald's, the income does not change. And that's the most important thing that, we try to emphasize when we put together a plan. Yes, if you're in the stock market, the stock market's going to correct. There are always going to be corrections, especially when you get a big increase or a run-up. So that's number one. Number two, the income is not going to change. In fact, between 2008 and 2009, most of the big stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, with the exception of the banking stocks, which were going through TARP, they actually increased their dividends during that period of time. So had you not panicked at the bottom of the market in 2009, let's say in March, when the S&P got down to 666, and you just said, these are good companies, I'm holding on, two things would have happened. Number one, your income would have gone up, which is the reason you're in these stocks. Number two, as time progressed, as the economy recovered, every one of these stocks increased. They came back. Many of them have now exceeded their former highs. ExxonMobil today is where it was at the peak of the market in 2007 and 2008, not to mention the fact that your income has gone up by over 80% during that period of time. And that is the greatest assurance that you can have when you put together a plan, is that you know what each portion of the portfolio is doing. You know what its function is. The annuity, the fixed income, that's providing me the bulk of the income I need to meet my basic living standards. The dividends that I'm getting from my dividend-paying stocks, that's not only providing me with income, but it's also going to be my inflation hedge.
Why do you suppose most people don't put together a plan? I can think of a couple of ideas, but I'd like to hear your response on it. I mean, somewhat, maybe 50, 60, 70% of people don't do that here in this country. Is it really, we go back to the angst again, is it fear?
You know, I don't know if it's fear or the fact that it's they don't know where to begin. It's like they don't think about it. They haven't sat down. You know, I've seen people that don't have formal plans, and we've done a couple case studies. I had a case study that we did of a couple that the individual retired in 2002, took a look at his assets. He put half of his assets in bond funds, half of his assets in stock funds. And that was pretty much his retirement plan, John, that worked fairly decently until about 2007. Because after 2007, the Fed began lowering interest rates, which reduced the income from his bond funds. Obviously, the bear market in stocks reduced the value of his stock holdings. But I think a lot of it is people just don't think about it. They don't know where to begin, how to go about it. You take a look at the complexity of the tax laws, the complexity of Medicare. I met recently, we just completed a retirement plan where an individual, he's a doctor, he's actually working. He wants to continue to work even though his wife is retired because he loves what he's doing. And I told him, I said, you know, you're age 66, why don't you go for your Social Security? You can qualify for Social Security and get your Social Security benefit. And he said, I thought I would get penalized if I took Social Security and continued to work. And I said, those were the old laws that went out the window with the Retirement Act in 2000 under Clinton, which changed all of that. And now, if you wait till your full retirement age at age 66, in his case, you're no longer penalized for working. And it's something that we discussed on the program last week with Yolanda York from the Department of Social Security when she emphasized all this and talked about how you can even plan for this. You know, Social Security has a website. You can put in some planning scenarios. Should I get my benefits at age 62? Should I wait to age 66? Or if I wait from age 66 to let's say age 70, how much my increases would be. So this is the reason. But those are the things that I've seen. I think the laws are so complex. I think people just don't know where to begin. They don't know how to go about it. And so, John, a lot of times it's done haphazardly. And then in many cases, in the case of a couple that we discussed back in 2002, where they thought they had enough assets that, you know, they put 50% in bonds and stocks, and along comes the financial crisis of 2007 and 2009 that threw that retirement plan or informal retirement plan out the window. So in your case, why do you think people don't do retirement plans?
Well, I think I have two reasons for why people don't do it. Number one is angst. I mean, they really just are fearful of that. But that fear is driven a lot of times because once you get below a certain income level, Jim, retirement planning doesn't work. You're not going to have enough to put aside for retirement and to invest. And they're just living day to day, paycheck to paycheck. And they figure, well, I take what comes when it comes. And that's about it. I think they're just throwing themselves on the mercy of fate.
Well, it was interesting because one of the national statistics that have come out regarding future retirement planning is almost one third of males age 65, John, plan to work to age 80. And one of the options for income, you know, we've talked about three sources of income for meeting your retirement objectives for providing income. One was annuities, two was bonds, and three was stocks. A fourth option is work. And I have a lot of clients that don't need to work in retirement, but have elected, I have several doctors that have done this, who have elected to work because they enjoy the stimulus of working. They enjoy what it is that they do. They're probably keeping less hectic schedules now that they no longer need to work. But work is also a fourth option for income. So if we really boil this down and summarize it, it begins with having a plan and knowing what your number is, what your basic living expense number is, what your want-to-have number is, and what your future benefits number is. Then when you decide that, you really have four options that can help make and fulfill the void that's not made from, let's say, Social Security or a pension. You can use annuities, you can use bonds, you can use stocks, or you can consider some form of work, either part-time or full-time in the case of maybe one spouse out of the two. But you've got a lot of ways that you can solve this problem. It's unfortunate that people really don't put together a plan and think this through, because if they did, John, they would enjoy a more prosperous retirement and would probably sleep better at night knowing that the things that they have, they're not going to have to worry about those things of outliving their assets, not worry about inflation, not worry about medical expenses or future medical expenses, or what if Congress changes things. And so that's one of the important things that I think that can bring a lot more surety to retirement is having that plan, because then you don't find yourself reacting. And I would say, even now, John, now that we're talking about redoing the tax laws, you know what? There's ways that you can counteract that. You can move to a low tax state. You can move to a state that has no income taxes, where you have quality life, a lower cost of living. And I think this is going to be incorporated in a lot more of what we do in retirement planning. As I mentioned at the beginning of this segment, I'm working with two couples right now that were putting together a retirement plan. And one of the issues in that retirement plan is where they're going to move to. They're not going to stay in the high tax rate or the high tax rate state that they currently worked through their working career. And they're looking at some alternatives of where to move to. And so that's going to be incorporated into the plan in terms of lowering their expenses, and taxes is certainly going to be one of them. Cost of living is going to be one of them in terms of what does it cost for housing? What does it cost, you know, sales tax, property taxes, real estate in general? All of this needs to be incorporated in a retirement plan. But if you take those steps, you know what? You're going to have a worry-free retirement.
I am going to find it succinctly interesting, Jim, in the few weeks that remain of this year and this Congress, to see whether or not they deal with the taxation issue. Let's face it, they are going to take the hardball issues. Those are going to be a case of can kicking. It's going to get thrown into next year as it gets thrown on down the road. But in the short term, we have to play out this little kabuki theater of what we're going to do as far as taxation. And as you mentioned during the program, if you notice, cutbacks are never seriously on the table.
No, in fact, they even talked about if sequestration was to go through, the increase in entitlement spending would more than offset it. So actually, if you look at the next 4 years, government spending is expected to rise from its current state of about $3.6 trillion to $4.3 trillion in Obama's last year in office in his second term. So we're talking about, John, another almost $700 billion increase in government spending. And so it's going to be an issue that sooner or later, I think the bond market, either we address it formally through a Simpson-Bowles type plan where we bring that debt to GDP ratio in line, or the bond market will eventually force politicians to take those steps as they're doing now in Europe and as they've done elsewhere around the globe. But I would say what we're probably going to see as we get closer to the end of the year is some kind of compromise solution. They'll kick the can over into next year, because you can't expect a holiday shortened working session in Congress to iron out all these major issues from tax reform to entitlement reform. They'll probably come together with some kind of short-term solution that will be called a down payment. They'll have a big press conference and they'll kick the real issues into next year. Let's just hope next year there is a real attempt to address these issues, because if we don't address the real issue, which is government spending, and you can't do that unless you address entitlements, which is where two-thirds of the government's budget is, you're not going to address this problem, and it's not going to go away. It'll come back, unfortunately, John, with our debt levels this large, it'll be hitting us every single year. But with that dour thought, let's leave with some holiday cheer.
Gobble, gobble.
Gobble, gobble. You know, I'm looking forward to sailing every single weekend. I haven't sailed in last couple of weeks. We've either had very, very cold temperatures, no winds or rain. So we're looking at warm temperatures and a beautiful day for sailing. And I hope you will have a beautiful weekend as well. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense News Hour. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant holiday weekend.
We just sail away into the southern night. Everything gonna be all alright if you're lost at sea. Baby, we'll sail away into the southern sky. Everything's gonna be just fine. Sail away with me.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.
This segment of the Financial Sense News Hour is brought to you by Nationwide Financial. For more information about Nationwide's products and services, please visit nationwide.com. That's nationwide.com. Neither Nationwide nor any of its affiliates is related to or affiliated with Jim Poplava of Poplava Securities, Incorporated.